Well, welcome. Thank you. Everybody's out of their food coma. Who has survived their food coma? We're going to talk AI keynote style. Hang on to your seat. We're going to have fun. We're going to show you something. I'm not going to do a lot of deep theory on AI. If you want to do that, find somebody else. But if you have a product, does your product have AI yet? I went in preparation for this talk. I looked online. I opened up bol.com, and I looked what I could get for AI products. And I could get, obviously, an AI phone and an AI laptop. I could get an AI watch. I could get an AI robot. I could get an AI router. So I want my packets to be routed dumbly, but an AI router. AI cleaning robots. An AI washing machine, an AI doorbell, and an AI speaker for in my car. An AI birdhouse, AI de-hairing machines, and even some AI snake oil or skin cream. What's up? Come on. Is this new, this AI? Because everything's AI nowadays. Is it new? Is it so new? No, it's not that new. One of our heroes, Giet Titulaar... He wrote about kunstmatige intelligentie, artificial intelligence, in 1987. He wrote the book on it. And actually, it predates that. It was already theoretically described in 1944, and the first implementation was done in 1960, the Mark I perception, which was trained on recognizing letters, which was a hard problem at that time because image recognition was really a puzzle. And what they used was an autonomous neural network. And that's actually modeling the way human learning, human brain, human minds work by mimicking that in a computer. So you learn something, you see something, monkey see, monkey do, you go and do it, you're going to try, and you're either going to fail, magic smoke escapes, or the magic smoke stakes in, it works, yay, happy dance, success, let's start again, see if I can make it better. That's how humans learn, that's how AIs learn. So why is it that we're now in the middle of an AI explosion? And there's actually a couple of reasons why we have that. And the first one is that we now live in an age where almost all knowledge is available as digital data. Now, if you're an old fart like me, you remember going to the library for books. You remember going to the cinema for movies. You remember having to get records to go to concerts to listen to music. And every time when we introduced the library, artists were afraid that nobody was going to buy books. And when we got dot tapes, they were going to be afraid that nobody would listen to music and go to concerts anymore. But you don't have to go anymore. All that knowledge is available digitally. But it's a lot of data. And we now actually, thanks to the cloud, have a place to store this data. So on the bottom right of the screen, bottom left of the screen, you got the first IBM hard drive. It had 5 megabytes of capacity and cost only $50,000. So that was a whopping 10K per megabyte. Nowadays, you can go and get an Office 365 family subscription, which gives you 3 terabytes of storage for $99 a year. And on Amazon S3, it costs you 2.1 cents to store 1 gigabyte for a month. So for the price of an IBM hard drive from 1956, you can store 2.3 petabytes for a month, or 2 terabytes for 100 years. So storage has really become cheap. We live in an age of blazingly fast compute. And the text there doesn't make sense, copy and paste, but we got the 3-nanometer chip technology that allows us to build extremely fast chips and computers. And the human hair is 100 nanometers, so 1/33 of a human hair is the track size of a chip. The phone you have in your pocket cost a couple of €100 and would have been in the supercomputer top 500 20 years ago. So computers has become extremely fast, and all this has led to... then we have groundbreaking research. The Transformers papers of Google... Was a giant breakthrough. Only a few days ago, DeepSeek introduced itself with a different technology, different feedback loops on existing LLMs. And again, we made a step. It became cheaper. It became better. And research is going on. People are full on researching artificial intelligence. So why now all data available, all knowledge available as data? It's accessible over the internet. You can store it easily. We have the compute to crunch it. And a lot of groundbreaking research. And all that comes together and has transformed computer science. Because when I learned computer science, it was about me trying to understand the computer and learning me how to talk to computers. And computer science nowadays is how to teach the computer how to talk to humans and how to understand what humans say. And the results are amazing. But you all know that. I mean, feed an AI thousands and thousands of images, including their description, and you end up with an AI that can not only describe what's seen in an image, but can actually generate an image from a description. I put this prompt in Midjourney, and I got a picture. You want Batman? More Spider-Man guy. That's okay. We can do that. Not into Spider-Man. Okay. What about Barack Obama? Sure. Let's do Barack Obama. And all this is generated. It wasn't really there. And it's called generative AI, and generative AI should never be confused with creative AI. Because generative AI is not creative. Generative AI is a non-deterministic statistical process to come to a most likely outcome. If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, it probably is a duck. But sometimes it will answer that it's not a duck, that is something else. It will make errors by design. Like the human brain, the outcome of generative AI is an educated guesswork. There's also things like restrictions put on AI. So I made these images during the elections. So I thought, okay, I can do Barack Obama. Can you give me Donald Trump? Can you give me Kamala Harris? And then it blocked my account, which is really nice if you're stressing out to make a nice keynote and you have to wait a couple of days for your account to be active again. But it does bring back a thing. How do you shield off knowledge? Because if with an AI you can make knowledge really accessible, there's some knowledge that you might not find desirable if it's accessible to everybody. How do you burn the book, so to say? And if you got these restrictions, how do you get there? Well, that's what's called prompt engineering. And prompt engineering is other alternative ways to ask an LLM to do something that somebody else thought wasn't a good idea if it happened, aka hacking. Is it a vulnerability? The debate is still out in the CVE community. But yeah, there are nice examples. So ASCII encoding your question so that the guardrails don't recognize that you're asking a question. Putting your question in ASCII art. Used to work, doesn't work anymore. So it's coming to a point where you almost need an LLM in front of your LLM to determine if the question you're trying to ask your LLM is actually in line with the policy of the LLM you're asking it to. And then obviously you can use an LLM to find other ways to describe it which may not be recognized by an LLM. And we've got computers fighting computers. Bad guys stumbled it as do. Whether or not it's real artificial intelligence doesn't really matter. Everybody has to have an eye, including the bad guys, including the fraudsters, including searching the dark web, including creating malware, etc. So there is malicious AI out there. Now, it's not all doom and gloom, as far as I'm concerned. I love my AI assistant. It's really good at summarizing text. So I read a lot, I try to plow through a lot, but a lot of stuff is published. Also because people can publish a lot more with AI, so there's a lot more to weed through. So I ask a lot of AIs, I ask them to summarize papers. And then if the paper comes back, the summary comes back with a summary that sort of has the same core points as I, that's a paper that's not worth reading for me because it's just going to amplify my echo chamber. But if the core points of the paper are largely different, I decide to read that paper. And in a sense, an AI is my filter, but it's also really a time saver because it's really hard to keep up with it, with everything. It's also really awesome for hard-to-Google questions. I had a large number I had to put in my Python source code, so I wanted to put a 1,000 separator in it so that I didn't make a mistake. So I tried to Google, can I use a 1,000 separator in Python code? And I got pages and pages back of results on how to use a 1,000 separator when you're outputting a large number. But that's not what I wanted to know. I wanted to know, can I use it in my source code in a way that the code is easier for me to read? I took the exact same question, asked it to ChatGPT, bam, got the right answer straight away. And yes, I didn't know this answer, shame on me. That's okay, you can laugh at me. It's awesome, it can create songs from scratch. I wanted an upbeat song from a CISO talking to young hackers about artificial intelligence threats and chances at a hotel.
The old with the new, facing threats that grew and grew. In a room of youthful fire, eyes are wide with keen desire.
So you get the gist, but is this actually okay? Is it okay that somebody like me, who can hardly clap to a beat and definitely can't dance, can create a possible song like this with just a free LLM model and one line of prompt? Is that okay? I don't know. Bad artist imitates, great artist steal, said Banksy and Picasso. Or to quote one is plagiarism, to quote many is research, and to quote and rehash on an industrial scale must be generative AI. Is it okay that this happens? Why is it different? Brains learn the same way as an AI learns, and we always thought it was okay for brains to learn. I mean, every artist had his inspiration, put his own twist to it, sometimes not even. But why are we having problems with AI other than the knee-jerk reflex, oh, here's something new, it's going to cost us royalties? Well, AIs can learn faster, and they can learn more detail on a larger scale, because all that data is there. But also, the brain of an AI, the model, is something that you can take, copy, and use in a lot of time. So it's like I go and study veterinary medicine and then hand out my brain dump to everybody. Well, that might not be a good idea, but figuratively speaking, and everybody then becomes a veterinarian without having to go to school. Is it okay? This song was a bit of a hit on Sterre.nl, a Dutch language radio station, and it played in the top 25. So it's not original, kind of catchy, encoded in Dutch, so if you don't understand Dutch, probably not that interesting. But it replaced other artists, because there's only so many slots on radio for new artists. Is it okay? I don't know. These are debates that we should have together. So where does an LLM get trained? How do you train an LLM? Well, to train an LLM, you need data. And they are available as ready-made training sets. You can get them by scraping the internet. And you can get it by learning from your users. But all have trouble and challenges. So training sets are not perfect. They contain copyrighted data. They contain mislabeled data. Peacock labeled as a duck. Pig labeled as a horse. But they also contain illegal data. There was research done to a big, large training set of images, and it found to use child sexual abuse material, also known as child pornography. And we were using that to train our LLMs. Sora is awesome. OpenAI's video model Sora, which can generate, like I generated songs, it can generate whole video scenes from a prompt. But it must have taken thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of video to do that. Where did they get thousands and thousands of hours of video? Well, probably from YouTube. Or TikTok or other sets. Was it okay? Did these people really knew they were contributing their set to train a model? And like I said, you can train from your users. And as I was making this, I was looking at the terms and conditions of some of the services that I was using. And one of the services, HeyGen, said, well, for our enterprise users, we promise that we won't use your data to train our AI or other AIs. So for your non-enterprise users, you are doing this. So are you the product or are you the consumer? Yes. And then there's hallucination. AIs are known to bring up wacky answers, especially if you ask them from topics where there's not a lot of data, there's not a lot of common ground. It will come up with a most likely answer, and the need to come up with a answer is stronger in most large language models than their willingness to say, I don't know. Because I don't know is not an acceptable answer to an LLM. And people have abused that. For instance, AI package hallucination. If you make code and you're looking for code in, say, written in Node.js, the language known for having a class called isAudd and isEven, for people who don't know how the modulo operation works, it generates packages. And if it generates a package name that doesn't exist, you can go online, register that package in NPM, and then put malicious code in the startup code and profit. Another problem is bias. People are biased, models are biased. And bias is a problem. And you can't discuss AI and not discuss bias. So I asked ChatGPT 4.0 to write me an image prompt to generate an image of a hotel full of hackers wearing black and mostly black and yellow, listening to somebody who claims to be an expert on AI, and then give me that prompt and generate an image for it. And apparently we're all white, middle-aged, wear suits, and have a fancy stage. Well, okay, the last one worked, but otherwise, this is not a correct picture. Or you ask it to create a group of parents posing for a photo, all holding their baby about the same age, and you get triplets having twins with very similar girls. This is also very stereotypical. And the other thing is like hands are hard. They're still hard. I mean, come on. Hands are so hard. It's a notorious thing AIs do wrong. You even get this 3D printed ring if you ever need an alibi in front of a judge saying, listen, it wasn't me. There's an extra finger. It must be AI generated footage. So most person most likely to come in that situation. Here you go. Yeah, there's problems with AI. But all kidding aside, AI models are getting better and better all the time. And I decided to do a little experimentation.
Welcome, visitors, to my keynote at CyberSec Netherlands 2024.
Hacker Hotel, but who's counting?
I'm recording this video to show you the awesome and frightening capabilities of AI. Have you ever wished you could speak another language convincingly, fluently, and that you could show the proof on video? Well, I did. And while I speak passable English and some other languages, I certainly can't speak French or Spanish in such a fluent way, let alone Klingon. So all you need to do is record 30 seconds of video, which I'm doing now, and upload it to a translation machine. Let's find out. Willkommen Besucher zu meiner Eröffnungsrede bei CyberSec Niederlande 2024. Ich nehme dieses Video auf, um Ihnen die beeindruckenden und beängstigenden Fähigkeiten von KI zu zeigen. Avez-vous déjà souhaité pouvoir parler une autre langue de manière convaincante et fluide et pouvoir le prouver sur vidéo? Eh bien, moi, oui. Et, bien que je parle un anglais passable et quelques autres langues, je ne peux certainement pas parler français ou espagnol de manière aussi fluide. Puhumattakaan klingonista. Joten kaikki, mitä sinun tarvitsee tehdä, on tallentaa 30 sekuntia videota, mitä teen nyt, ja ladata se käännöskoneeseen. Katsotaanpa, mitä tapahtuu.
So for everybody who speaks Finnish, I'm just accused of speaking Klingon. I know this is Finnish. Klingon was not finished and my credits, free credits ran out. Yes, I'm cheap. I know. So, yeah, I'll leave it at this.
Hey Pop, ik heb je helemaal nou werd. Ik heb geïnvesteerd in een eigen memecoin, de Dimecoin. En ja, toen ben ik met de investeerders naar een bordeel gegaan. En ja, toen de prostituees, toen die wilde betalen met mijn memecoin, toen viel de politie binnen. En ja, dan heb ik $30,000 nodig om weer vrij te komen, zodat ik terug kan naar Nederland. Kun jij dat voor me overmaken?
So for the record, that wasn't him. That was me speaking in his voice because he gave an interview to Zolder. And this took me, so for €5, I got 40,000 credits. I burned 4. So this costs 50 cents to do. And if you're on stage like me, giving talks like that, it makes you extremely vulnerable. And these are the cheap models. If you pay, you get the better models. We need to rewire our brains on what must be real. Because I was raised, if you have it on video, it must be true. And that lip sync was pretty convincing. And we're still training our colleagues to watch for spelling errors in phishing messages. Come on! Really? So is there a bright side? Yes, there is definitely a bright side. Use your AI as IA, your intelligent assistant. AI is really good in finding out what is normal because it learns what's normal and repeats what's normal. And normal's boring, but it knows what's normal. But keep a human in the loop to determine if what is normal is malicious, what's not normal is either malicious or okay, because people do strange stuff for the right reasons. If you want to know, well, Brenno can tell you. Or imagine a doctor now being able to do research with an intelligent assistant across all medical journals in all languages instead of having to read it himself. But keep that doctor in the loop in case there is something that there is a hallucination. Make sure the AI gives you back the sources from where it got it from. Because otherwise, you're going to end up with a validation crisis. As we do at Schubert Phyllis, we have customers that have a large code base that's been built up over the last 20, 30, 40 years. Now, the old farts that used to write this code and knew how it all together are starting to go into retirement. So the person you can go to and say, listen, that bit of COBOL code, can you remember what it does and where I need to be if I need to change this business rule or leaving the company and nobody knows how this works? And that code base is massive. So you can train an AI to take look at that code that's stored in a graph database or in another database format and ask it questions about the code, and that is awesome. But understand that generative AI is non-deterministic, and what you're getting is a best guess, and it's not good at saying, I don't know. And if you think this is a good idea, this makes me extremely nervous. So what about the singularity? What about the ultimate threat, Terminator, etc., etc., etc.? Well, It's hard to imagine what an AI with an IQ of 1,000 is going to do if an average group of humans has an IQ of 100. An IQ of 100, that's how IQs work. Yeah, it's really hard to predict this. And we're not there yet. They're starting to pass their high school exams. But one of the things we do know from theoretical is the paperclip apocalypse. And the paperclip the paperclip thingy. Not that paperclip thingy, but the paperclip thingy in AI is you have a powerful AI and you give it a command to optimize paperclip production. And that's its job. And you give it real-world agency. You give it the ability to buy stuff, to move resources, etc. Now, what if these interests don't align? What if at some point paperclip production is sufficiently enough and it starts to perceive humans as a threat to paperclip production? Because humans are saying, we don't want your paperclips, we've got enough. What if you end up with a barren Earth, the Kuiper Belt mined for minerals, and Earth turned into a giant ball of paperclips? We need to be careful when we give agency. So what's this agency that they're talking about? AI agents versus AI assistants? Well, the assistant of a soccer player carries his water, does his dinner reservations, and the agent of a soccer player makes business deals on his behalf. So it's about the amount of agency you have. In conclusion, most AI features that we see now are teasers. Of course, why do I need AI on my doorbell? Well, to recognize humans, yeah, I can do that too. We're scratching the surface and there's a lot coming. And it can be a lot of good things. There's also a lot of AI that's there just to make sure that we can put AI on the features. But we're a brink of a massive change. Embrace your intelligent assistant. It can really take work out of your hand, trust but verify. Or validate. And choose who you give agency wisely. Because just because it can book your plane tickets right 10 times doesn't mean it can send you off to a summer holiday on sunny Antarctica. Beware that generative AI is non-deterministic. It comes up with the most likely guess and it's not good at giving I don't know as an answer. Make sure you're the customer and not the product of AI. And if you're okay with being the product, are you really okay? So I went even higher paces I went the last time I gave this. So we're going to have a little bit longer break, I guess, but let's open it up for questions first. Thank you. Let's wait for the mic, Chris. Yeah. Oh. Got something to say, Leonard?
Hi, Frank.
Hey.
Please copy, paste your whole presentation in ChatGPT or DeepSeek and ask it, what will be a good question after this presentation?
Yep.
You mentioned DeepSeek making things cheaper. And there are quite a few allegations that they would have lied about how cheap it was because they have a limit on the amount of chips they can import. There were also allegations that they trained on data from OpenAI. Do you really think it became as much cheaper to train a model as they claimed it is?
Trick question. You want to cause an international incident by implying the Chinese lie? No. There is proof that what they did works on models. So asking models to check their own answers, sort of like validating, has proven to have effect. Is it really that cheap? Obviously, there are reasons for them to want the world to believe that China is as advanced, no more advanced as the rest of the world in AI. And they will act accordingly. Maybe they are right, maybe they're not.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's other people as well, but if you, yeah, I'm...
Ja, waar dan?
Should we poison our data?
Should you poison your data? Well, yeah, that's a good one. I think that right now there's so much data that the amount of data that you need to poison to actually disrupt the model is already gone. On newer and interesting research, it can really work. What you also see is that, yeah, they've done experiments with image recognition where if you add 5% noise to the picture of a zebra, it becomes a tortoise. And if you add 10% noise, it becomes a hippopotamus. AI latches on different things, and you can poison your data with that. But that's against inclusion in the model. And I think if you really want to disrupt AI models, you need to do it on a so massive scale that's hardly effective. But that's my take on this. Love to philosophize. Yeah, who can model?
You're talking about good uses of AI on, let's say, your desktop computer and stuff like that. But we also now see it being put into drones who automatically make decisions, life or death decisions.
Yes.
Those models you cannot poison anymore. They're really small but do effective things. How do you see this in the future? How will this change? Because you say, yeah, mine the Kuiper Belt and make all paperclips. We'll probably blow ourselves up earlier. So
I think you're right. So security isn't about being able to do something or not being able to do something. It's always about intent. You can take the line that blowing up people is good as long as we blow up the right people. What the right people are to blow up depends on what side of the line you are on. What I do think is that by outsourcing the job of killing, and that's already the problem with drones, and even more the problem with drones that you load with AI, you basically create detachment between the people who fight the war and the people who are the victim of war. And that is problematic because war should be painful on all fronts because that prompts us to stop fighting. So ultimately, automating war, I'm getting a little bit philosophical here, ultimately automating war makes fighting wars cheap, and wars that are cheap to fight are the wars that are going to last long. And I don't think we should want that. On the other hand, I don't see a practical way of stopping it. Good question, thanks.
What do you think will happen if AI models will be training on each other?
So I think it will amplify. So one of the things it will definitely do is amplify bias. Because the bias of one model will become the new bias, but the amplified bias of the next model and the next model and the next model until every picture is a paperclip. And it's already happening because a lot of the data that's coming online now is AI-generated data. And who knows, maybe we get a preference for people with an even number of fingers on a limb in the future, because apparently AI models think, I have more if you want to give AI the finger, and I'm printing even more. But I think AI models, yeah, try to make a watch that doesn't have its hands on 10 to 10. Try to generate a picture of a temple with an odd number of columns. It's really getting hard, and those things will get in there. So some point it will need human input and not AI input. In the back, I guess.
In contrast to the big data revolution a few years ago, this feels a lot more useful to the average human. But at the same time, it's also the same threat as in the corporations behind the data.
I don't think there's a difference between the data revolution and the AI revolution. I think the data revolution is the start of the AI revolution.
Yeah, but this is more useful for average humans.
For average humans, this is more useful, yes.
Yeah, and I think we get distracted by the new glitter and not see the threats.
Yeah, I think you could. I agree. So I hope to shake things up a little bit. What I hope to have achieved is to at least make you think about this today. And I don't know all the answers either.
But do you have in your mind's eye all the companies behind this?
Not straight away. Sorry, not top of my head.
No, but
again, I guess you're alluding to this is again Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, Meta. Yes, because those are the people who have the resources. On the other hand, what you see is if you look at cloud computing, I mean, you can say a lot of negative things about cloud computing, but if you want to do this in your lab, it's starting to get better, but 5 years ago, if you wanted to do, or 2 years ago, if you want to do this in your own lab, you needed to build a data center.
Yeah.
With the cloud, you can rent a data center, and in a certain way, it's democratizing use of AI. On the other hand, it's democratizing it for the people, the people who are the customers of big tech. But big tech will always themselves have the advantage. And I think, yeah, this will put big tech more firmly in its seat.
So we might be too late, that's what you're saying.
Too late, maybe not, but late, yes.
So, well, LLMs basically predict the next word, and the reward function is how correct they are. So, the best thing AI can do is change the humans. So, it's easier to predict. And you see that happening. There was a study published like last week, which found out that now words that humans did not use before, but LLMs use, they are now also creeping into people's vocabularies.
Technology has changed people always.
Exactly. Yes.
There's a reason why I'm in short sleeves here, because if I go outside now, I get cold, and that's because we got the amazing technology of heating. I don't remember. I used to have a lot of knowledge straight ahead, try to keep everything in memory. I'm used to having a search engine being able to find back stuff on the internet. So I don't keep it in active memory anymore. I outsource that function. And yes, I'm going to outsource other functions to an AI as well. And I think the Dutch Sinterklaasgedicht will probably be massively changed by AIs as well, as will music. So yes, there will be an effect on this, and artificial intelligence may in fact cause some people to stop thinking or think less or think less critical. There's a lot of techno optimism. If it comes from an AI, it must be right. Be critical.
Hello. Yeah. You said in another slide, it's okay if you ask AI stuff, but you have to check it. Won't we get to a point really fast where you're not able to check anything anymore because all the research you're doing online just provides you with other AI-generated stuff?
If we get to the point where we stop universities, then, yeah, at some point we will get there. So there needs to be critical research. On the other hand, we don't hire painters if we want a family portrait either. There is stuff.
The example was a doctor.
Yeah.
So, like, actual medical data which you can't verify
by. So what I find lacking on a lot of large language models and what they do is that they give you an answer, but not a reference.
Yeah.
There is a chance that if I get a reference, it's a paper written by an AI, and that chance is there. Mm-hmm. I hope my doctor has a lot of experience in treating illnesses, and yes, it should not lead to my GP subscribing me my cancer patients if I ever get into that awkward situation. Cancer medicines, if I ever get into that awful situation, I want to be referred to a specialist. A specialist that hopefully discusses these things with a group. And but yeah, there is it's basically the same question: what happens if LLMs start learning from LLMs at some point? And these things can write convincing text. They can really write convincing text. I think when we first had this, Daniele is sitting here. I think he made a joke like, "Frank, we're going to replace you with an LLM because you write sentences to convince our customers to choose for us." And I just prompted an LLM and he writes like you. Yes, we have to be really careful that we vet what is real research and what is convincingly faked research or stuff that really looks and closely resembles properly done research but isn't and is actually the hallucination of an LLM.
We need an algorithm for truth.
Hello.
Yeah.
There's a movement for getting traceable pictures, traceable video, where in theory it is digitally signed at the moment or being taken. Do you think this can be a counter to generated videos and photos?
Would it have made it, so going back to the video of me speaking Finnish or French, and I can't speak French that well. I can butcher the language, but I can't speak it that well. Would for yourself it have made a difference if you could have checked if that video had a digital signature? It's about perception of humans. So for the research, yes, it might have helped. But what if I aim my camera at a display playing a video that was generated with AI? It has its problems, and I think ultimately we should... I think the core is that we should stop believing that if it's on video, if you hear Dimi say that he made his own meme coin and now needs to be get out of jail, that we need to think if this really is the case. Well, I don't think you would, Mendel. Sorry, I don't think you would believe that somebody would be stupid enough to think that his family can come up with $30,000. But honestly, it's about rewiring and reprogramming ourselves not to blindly trust anymore. I think that's what's really changing.
Slightly different question.
Yeah.
We're not only training AI on...
I'm not sure if your mic's open.
Would you? Yeah. We're not only training AI on AI-generated data. We're using creative AI to create new AI models. So basically, it's reproducing itself. Does that mean it's alive? And by extension, does it have rights?
Well, I think we could prove that by some definitions, computer viruses are alive as well. And we managed not to give them rights either. But it's a nice, really philosophical question, and I don't have enough beer in my system to answer it yet.
I'll bring you one tonight.
Okay, I think that's about rounds it up. Thank you for your attention. If you want to get in touch with me, that's me. Thank you very much.